This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to the Business Masterclass. The first half of our business skills conversation is in association with USB Ed. Last week, we had Monet Mostert from USB Ed talking about scenario planning and the whole question of what if. Today's theme is on training and development in your business. Joining me, Richard Angus, in studio is SJ Pretorius, no stranger to the studio. Welcome.
Good afternoon. SJ. Thank you, Richard.
Great, SJ. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
My pleasure.
So the whole world of training and development, I mean, I think when we say the word training and development, everybody immediately thinks, great, a day out on course, so not the golf course, but on course, and it's a day of going to a venue somewhere, sometimes exotic, sometimes not, and spending some time in a room where you get bombarded with a whole lot of information, often death by PowerPoint type stuff, and you come back illuminated and engaged with a whole lot of extra information and insight.
Or bored to death.
Well, unfortunately. So for me, the question fundamentally comes to, we all know the traditional, let's call it formal training and development kind of picture that I've just sketched. But the reality is, in today's business world, I think a few things have changed. I think the first thing is we ask the questions, and that's where we're going to focus our conversations today, is the whole question of efficiency and effectiveness in training and development as a let's call it as a science. And the realization that we actually need to get outputs and outcomes from this effort that's put in, and that's not an evaluation form at the end of the day. Did you enjoy the venue? Was the material prepared? Did you know where you needed to go this morning? That's not measuring outcomes. That's not measuring the effectiveness.
Not at all. That's basically measuring the facilitator.
Exactly.
It doesn't measure the impact of the program.
Exactly. So, I mean, if I was to ask you to just for a moment for me define, let's call it training and development in maybe the word new age, or where we are now. How do people perceive, and how is training and development engaged in the modern organization?
More and more what's happening is that an organization, and I'm talking SMME specifically, will identify a requirement. And typically it is in accordance with the maturity level of the organization, that they start realizing, but my people can't sell, or my people can't do this, or my people can't do that. Now, it goes hand in hand nowadays with that maturity index of the company realizing that Richard is doing A, B, C, D, and E's work, but at the moment it's a necessity. Mm. And it starts with actually defining that Richard has multiple roles. When the multiple roles are being defined...
So it sounds like you're telling me that there's a very strong linkage here between, let's call it role activity or role definition, and training and development. So I think that's the first important point too.
I agree. And that's presuppositioned by the maturity of the organization. Mm. When it's a startup company, everybody does everything and that's acceptable and they just run. And they think about doing it by the seat of their pants. They don't think about getting training or coaching or mentoring for that.
Okay.
So once they have the moment to stand back and say, but hold on, are we chasing our tails? Can we do this better? And I love how you said efficiency and effectiveness. How can we do this more efficient with a higher effectivity rate? And that's when they also got to consider, if they spare somebody, it's not for a week program, it's not for a day program, it's maybe for 3 hours max out of a day. Mm. And they've got to have their return on investment in quotes. They got to have some proof, some practical feedback that what I did with these people works, or they will abandon it. It's a fast-moving ship, if you will, motorboat rather than a ship. Mm. It's not the Titanic anymore. It's a quick-moving motorboat across the waves. And if it's not working, they'll abandon it right away and they'll try the next thing. Mm. So, for instance, going back to sales, understanding that sales competency is really required, not just of the sales facing people, but maybe that you've got to start at some point and make sure that everybody in your organization understands how you sell, what you sell, what your market dominating position is, and how you're going to be able to handle objections and put the word out there that you are offering A, B, or C.
Mm.
And that kind of practical training is almost like offering a boot camp. I love saying to organizations, have you watched the Olympics? And have you seen how graceful those people are? Do you know what it takes to be a Chad Leclerc right now? How many hours he trains, how many hours he spends being coached? What about your salespeople? If they are out there running around for your company, do they practice? Do they train? Or do they practice on their customers?
Mm.
So it's a question of having the organizational management understand that right now we need to practice on something where we don't make a loss.
I was going to say, so in your analogy, and I actually appreciate that analogy, the reality is you're only going to be able to swim, let's take Chad Leclerc, the clothes will.
Again, free marketing for Chad.
Yeah. You're only going to be able to do something once or twice. Fundamentally, in his world, every single race in the professional space counts.
Exactly.
It's all part of the system. So just like that in the sales environment, every single engagement with a client is valuable. If you lose the deal, yes, it's important afterwards, and I'm always an advocate to and often say to people, if there's one thing that you can get and into your sales training or into your organization, maybe not even a training element, is if the client says no, ask why.
Absolutely.
With humbleness, simply say, you know, I realize you haven't accepted our proposal or you're not happy with what we've done. We can accept that. However, for our learning and development as a company and as a person, whatever it may be, could I ask you, for the benefit of our organization, for other opportunities, could you share with me why we've lost this business or what changed your mind or what allowed you to select somebody else over us? And I think, so that's also part of, let's call it, the training and development in the moment.
Absolutely. You know? It seems to be that there's a almost an unspoken code of honor that people feel ashamed to ask, why did I lose the business? They feel that they should be omnipotent and understand why they lost the business. There's nothing wrong with going and asking.
Mm.
And the candor that flows from that is often very welcomed by the customer.
It's quite interesting. I've personally had scenarios where things weren't going so well on a particular client and we were challenged with some issues. And I approached the client, spoke to them about the issues that they were facing. And I realized, and in the conversation, I asked them if they would allow me to do certain things that are part of our process in the finance team and that are part of our service model per se. And I wouldn't say that I've been trained to follow, but that I know I need to follow because it just makes good business sense. And one of those things was to, you know, realize what my obligations were to the client and what I needed to do and be open and honest about them and deal with the situation. And I did that, and we were given an opportunity to do some changes and present a better outcome for the client ultimately. And after I did, we'd agreed what we were going to do, I had the distinct feeling that I needed to ask the question. And I said to the person involved, I said, are you comfortable with what I've suggested as an approach? She said, oh, I'm exceptionally comfortable. I'm happy and we'll move forward with you on this basis. And I said to her, what would have happened if I hadn't offered this today? And she looked at me and she said, well, I'd already had the conversations about whether we would be using your services going forward. She says, but because of the choices you've made, you've now changed my approach on that. So that was feedback that I was seeking. And I think, yeah, it's very important to be able to be open and honest. And that's something that you can't really train into people. It's either, I guess it's more an understanding and a value system than anything else. I mean, so just on that, I mean, what can you train and what can't you train? I mean, there's the obvious stuff, you know, we can all go on an Excel course. We can all go on a Word course and a PowerPoint course and a whatever course. So there's the stuff that, let's call it academically, you can tick the box. There's skills courses, et cetera. But where is the line around what needs to move from a, let's call it a training intervention into a more developmental intervention, perhaps? And what is the type of development that is out there and is available?
Okay, sticking once again to the sales example.
Mm-hmm.
People go out by trial and error,
mm-hmm.
and they learn how to sell on the customer. And that costs the modern organization a whole amount of business.
Mm.
Because you could be sitting with a buffoon that just wants to sell, and doesn't listen to what's coming back from the customer, all the way to the petrified little person that hates to ask for the business and keeps giving facts and figures and give them across. And it's about taking a step for them, for with all the sales and sales support people connected, taking a look at what are the sales personalities. And there are really about five. And looking at those sales personalities, which ones talk to which ones? And it's a modified version, I believe, of the DISC profile.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a book written by a former mentor of mine, if I may mention him, Blair mm-hmm. Singer, Sales mm-hmm. Dogs. And he classifies them as a pit bull. Mm-hmm. And you can think the pit bull is the mm-hmm. the bite and buy, and that's what he's interested in.
Mm.
You've got the retriever that's got tremendous after-sale service, but not so good on the upfront sales. You've got the poodle that works with lots of people and loves the glamour.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the basset hound that is just as passive as anything and unupsettable by anything. And then you've got the chihuahua, which is the little fact monger that will talk himself out of a sale with any other dog than a chihuahua four times before he realizes he's long lost the sale.
Mm.
And when you use something like that as a frame of reference where the people can see and the people can start understanding how the other people react, and you teach them to practice on each other in the team, it instantly makes this very practical, and it helps them to then take this out into the world and go and practice according to their niche of selling, and not try and sell like the pit bull when you're a chihuahua.
Mm.
Not try and sell like the poodle when you're a retriever. But understand you've got a niche and understand who sits across the table from you.
So when we talk training and development, you're saying it's not one size fits all. And in fact, you need to make sure that you customize the training and development in your environment for your people.
Exactly.
So that you get the most effective engagement. So if I have a general sales course where I teach selling skills, I'm probably wasting my time and potentially my money in terms of an efficiency and an effectiveness element.
Very much so.
It sounds like, from what you're describing, and I mean, I think it's a very practical example that many people, I mean, if I think of organizations that I participate in and work with, the reality is as you were repeating those words, I'm kind of going, okay, that person. And yet I know that when we talk about training and development, I'm not sure we would have a different, in those organizations, if we would have a different selling training engagement. In fact, I know that those sales teams sit together and they talk about, you know, the ability to close and the ability to, you know, open doors and all the, but it's a one size fits all. So, I think that's if we can have some takeaway points from today's conversation. For me, the big one is effectively, as the leader in the organization, know your customer, i.e. the people you're leading, in terms of know what they're about and what will fit best. Otherwise, you're going to have a very inefficient training and development spend, because at the end of the day, you're going to, it's a little bit like the choice between the shotgun and the rifle. You know, it's a, let's call it a spray and pray approach. And the, you know, okay, I'm going after that, that, and then the very specific targeted outcomes. Now, I mean, when we talk about training, I mean, the, for me, and sorry, the accountant comes out, the whole question of just efficiency of spend, because I've seen organizations spend huge amounts of money on training and developing their people, and you kind of go, okay, so we've done some training and development here. How do we know that it's been effective? How efficiently have we done this? And how do we measure the outcomes? Now, have you got any insights there? I mean, how do businesses out there actually get a handle on that type of thing?
I've got very specific, again, when you come to sales from a coaching and mentoring background, there are very, very specific outcomes you want. Sales starts with the amount of leads or referrals that you pour in the top of the funnel.
Okay.
So first of all, you are looking at independent salespeople that generate their own. So you'll measure each one of them as a starting point. The first key performance indicator is how many leads are you generating? How many referrals are you soliciting? Because a referral is much nicer than a lead, right? Let's face it. Then the next point is, how many of those, if you were to write a list of them, how many of those do you actually get to talk to on the phone? So there's a conversion rate, number one. From finding them to talking to them. And there's a number that gets lost. It's typically 80%, because some people's numbers change, some people lose their phones, other crazy reasons, maybe they just fobbed you off with a business card and they don't want to speak to you and they block your call. Who knows?
So that would be the people that I've got on my phone with, do not answer this number.
Yes, that kind of thing. and then the next conversion rate that you're looking at. So you're looking at leads, you're looking at conversion rates, but the conversion rates is multiple. So the conversion rate from those that you spoke to and those that you actually get to present your offering to is the next conversion rate. And from that presentation or appointment or that face-to-face meeting or even a Skype call, depending on where your customer sits and how you service them, the next conversion rate is to the close. And that is cyclical. That is the longest closing period, because this is where the guy may field quite a few objections your way. And in that closing ratio and the cycle of objection handling is where the biggest learning appears, and the effect of the learning comes to play. And it's about you optimizing that period by preempting as much as possible of what the client could possibly object to. From the closure rate, you're not finished, because from the closure rate, you want to solicit a good testimonial and one or two referrals. Now, us South Africans are very scared of asking for referrals at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say, you say the word referral, and I think everybody goes, oh, no, no, don't ask me for that.
And you know why? The typical insurance person, when he sits across the table from you, before he starts selling you anything, says, do you know five people that I can contact?
And say that I got your number from you. That's the part that irritates me the most.
Giving it a bad name. So if you leave it to the end of the cycle where the person has closed, the business has been delivered, whether it's products or services, and the customer is happy with what he got, it's so much easier to solicit honest referrals.
Yeah.
And then the question is not, do you know five people? It's, do you know a number of people, anyone that can benefit from what we've offered you? And
yeah, well, I think that's, I mean, that's a true referral, saying, I'm going to give you somebody that I believe will benefit from your interaction with them. Not just who you'll benefit from as the supplier, but who I feel I have a, let's call it a values obligation to share what I've now found with you. And I mean, I've found that I often refer people that are suppliers. The nature of our business is we do refer people across different expertise levels, etc. And I, in turn, have had referrals where somebody would say to me, hey, listen, you know, I need, you know, this, I'll say, oh, this is a problem I'm dealing with. And they'll say, you know what, you need to speak to that person. And my experience is that when a genuine referral is made, 9 times out of 10, it's an exceptional service that we've received afterwards from that referred piece of business. And I look at this and I go, no, you can't train that into somebody. It's a case of you've delivered, you're effective, and now it's about, you know, knowing how to ask for those referrals if they're not going to come naturally. Yes. Some referrals happen naturally, but some don't. Okay, so now, I mean, when we talk about training and development, the first thing that I always had when this came up in many different organizations, the first thing that everybody asks is, so how much should I spend? Tell me, give me the number. You're the finance guy. It's amazing. You always ask the finance guys, give me the number. So I go, well, nothing. Of course, that always elicits a response. I said, but what is the right number? How do you determine that right number? Now, do you have any insights into that for me?
When you offer something similar to this type of customized sales training program, you look at a stake in the ground of specifically what do you as an organization currently mm-hmm. turn over, mm-hmm. what is your profit margin, and mm-hmm. what is your profit. Mm-hmm. And let's look at it per salesman if we have
mm-hmm.
to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we predict by making small tweaks, not mm-hmm. massive tweaks, small tweaks. If we can tweak the number of leads by 10% and we can tweak the initial conversion rate by 10%, the second one by 10%, and the third one by 10%, the impact is compounded.
Hugely.
So the change at the bottom is 400-500%. So if we can play with you on the basis of a small tweak prediction that we will increase your turnover on this particular salesperson, and that goes also for the margin as well as the profit by at least double, are you prepared to spend 10% of that on training? And they're very happy to go back and say, but if you can do that, I'll do it. I said, okay, so let's take a leap of faith, and that becomes my guarantee. If I know my stuff works and I go in and I train at that intimate level with the people, because you've got to get into the heads, you've got to analyze them, you've got to play with them and get them to grow into that better salesperson. If they get measured and they achieve these things, and of course, there's the possible backfire that you just get the non-compliant salesperson. You've got to.
And I mean, we've used sales here a lot today as the example, but I mean, this applies for every environment. If I'm training technicians, if I'm training finance staff, if I'm training risk professionals, if I'm training call center agents, it's the same principles that apply.
Absolutely. I mean, it's on the throughput that you measure.
It's the throughput and the improvement in the throughput that's critical.
Louis? Exactly.
Richard, it's shared, like your comments, I was involved for many years having teams of sell at the high end, large, expensive IT systems. The difference between training salespeople and technicians, etc., Richard, is the emotional component. And this is, I like your comment on that one. You know, now you sketch very professionally all the elements of the sales cycles, etc. It's so important to understand that if you can cut some of them and get qualified referrals, man, it makes a difference. As you say, small change can make a massive bottom line change. But the emotional component, because quite frankly, Americans, perhaps it comes naturally to them, not South Africans. therefore, that emotional comment of good selling, no matter how much training you do, if you don't address that somehow, they don't perform. And sales, you're going to find 1,000 reasons why you can't perform. But ultimately, it's a daily emotional thing. You're feeling on that, because selling is very emotional too. You can put the professional thing in place, but ultimately, it's your passion and how you approach things, or else the rest just fall to pieces. Your feelings on the emotional side?
Specifically, when you talk about the negative side of the emotions, my mentor, Blair, again, says, when your emotions goes up, your intelligence goes down.
Yes.
And it's so true, because
I love that saying, when emotions go up, intelligence goes down.
So it's worth early on bringing in a little technique, because your brain is fast. Is to just teach the person on the other side of the table, the person that is prone to losing that intelligence because of the emotions going up, and to avoid him reacting from that negative emotion is to buy a little bit of time.
Mm.
And you need to buy as much time as it takes to say the words, thank you.
Mm.
So it's actually make an acknowledgement. The person says you're ugly and your mother dresses you funny, and you go through the roof with this insult.
We feel threatened.
Is to just say, I'm sorry you think so, but that I'm sorry you think so, that acknowledgement is there to buy your brain time to regain control of you.
Mm.
So on the negative emotion side, I really want to get that in.
Mm.
And then it's about
that makes sense.
Teaching them to have a thick skin.
Mm.
But then also getting them, when you talk about the passion, there's nothing as beautiful as a salesman that is passionate about his business.
Mm.
It's to teach them to love what they do.
Mm.
And you know, it's hard. Mm. It's really hard because from tiny, people get taught that sales is a four-letter word.
That's it. I grew up in an Afrikaner home, and if you even spoke of business, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
And years taught me that's nonsense, of course. But it takes a mindset change.
It does. It's changing the whole attitude and mindset around it by offering the correct results over time.
Mm.
That makes perfect sense.
And just in wrapping up, I mean, fundamentally, what works better? Mentoring, coaching, let's call it on-the-job engagement, or the more formal stuff that we all know about? Because I'm a small business owner. I have very restricted time. My team has restricted times. Everybody's doing everything, as you so rightly pointed out. And now we want to do some development work. The reality is, where am I going to find the time? Where am I going to find the time to take people out of my business? I've now got to make those choices as a business owner, and I'm just painting this picture. So, you know, do I spend my time coaching a person on the job? And I know you said earlier, you know, we did make the point, you know, you're coaching in the moment and supporting in the moment, so you're really playing with, you know, as I always say, this is a one-take wonder, you know, it's live. You can't go back and say, sorry, let's redo that one. You know, that's the reality of training on the job is it's live. If the customer says, actually, I don't like what you've just said, I'm walking away, you've lost the opportunity. So, yeah, while it might be a learning opportunity, it's an expensive, you know, and I think that's something else we must put in the mix, that on-the-job training might sound cheap because you don't have to write a check, but the problem is the check coming the other way sometimes doesn't come because you mess it up. So you got to think of, you know, bear that in mind. Which of those two kind of structures in your mind is better, worse? Well, I mean, you know, I guess there's pros and cons of both.
There's pros and cons of both, absolutely. And it's directly linked to the maturity of the organization.
Ah, okay.
If you are Old Mutual and you are Sanlam, you can spare 20 people for a week at a time to go to a study school.
Mm.
And I must say that somebody like USB Ed now, University of Stellenbosch Executive Development, they are promoting for more than 10 years now that you do action learning and you do experiential learning. You don't no longer lecture, but you facilitate. So that has made a massive difference in those kind of programs from their viewpoint.
Mm.
Coming back to anybody smaller than your typical small corporate, people that still have multiple tasks for one person, kind of definition that we hashed out this morning, is the kind of guy that will at the moment gain far more from a coaching and mentoring input, even if it's kicked off with a Saturday dedicated to a team build initiative that kicks off the program, that pulls everybody together, gets the vision across everybody inspired properly, and then running through intermittent sessions that doesn't take them too much away from the client-facing work that they do.
Okay. Great.
Richard, sorry, I don't know, time is up, but this moving from a lecturing to what Issa is speaking is a very important principle, and people don't understand as you think of that. It makes a big difference. Lecturing builds resistance, you know, and the mindset doesn't change.
Yeah, exactly. The, as I always say, the death by PowerPoint type of scenario is just don't do it for me. Well, SJ, that's all we have time for today. Thank you very, very much for your input. I must just tell you that statement you made earlier of when emotions go up, intelligence goes down. That's a brilliant one. Just a comment to people: if you're interested in having daily business thoughts like that from the show, go to our Twitter feed and you'll see on there an ability to subscribe to daily business shows on your cell phone via Cell C and MTN platforms at the moment. Hopefully shortly with Vodacom. And yeah, we look to bring that type of thinking to everybody's awareness on a daily basis with that. So thank you, Esther. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate
thank you
being
very
here.
Much. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. Just if you want to join our live studio audience, you can email Kevin at leadershipplatform.com. That's leadershipplatform, double P in the middle. Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical. We're going to be talking in our SME development conversation with our guest, Zinzini Mashina of the La Eme Guest House.
This is CliffCentral.com.